live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. Cofield and Company Roadshow Studio Show. What does that mean? Well, I'm hanging out here at the Thomas and Mack as we're getting headed towards a Rebel basketball game at 7 o'clock. And before that is the Dan Mullen radio show actually airing from Thomas and Mack as well. So for those folks who do go out to Parkway Tavern, 215 and Flamingo, no show on the scene today as we have this convergence of events at the same time on a Thursday. So Dan Mullen radio show coming up at 6 o'clock, Rebel basketball at 7. Run a Rebel warm-up at 6:30. I'm trying to remember all the names of the shows. Jeff Parles is back in the Findlay Toyota Studios. So is James, running the boards, turning the knobs, spinning the dials. That's not really what happens anymore. That's an old-timey reference. Jeff, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. I'm good. It's a nice little Thursday we got for ourselves.
My lord. Yes, we'll get to F1 in a little bit because I can definitely feel that F1 is in town. Anyone who's driving right now, be aware. It's pretty busy down on the strip. Jeff, I will give you a choice. I don't think I've ever done this with you. I will give you a choice today because we have a rundown, but there's a lot of things that have broken in the last 90 minutes or so that are taken off. We can start out the show talking about nepotism or racism.
What a collection. Like, can we quit? Let's go nepotism.
I was going nepotism anyway.
I think nepotism is a good place to start.
Yeah, I can't do the racism thing too early because, just to tease it, I'm doing a show today with a tried and true Southerner and in Mitchell, and I don't want to talk to him about it off the air for 3 hours. Because I know once I go into this, he's going to want to talk. But I made some calls today. I'll just let you in on something on the racism thing. There's a lot of anger because people are making blanket statements about states in the South and college football jobs in the South. So we'll just leave it at that.
Hmm.
On nepotism. I think generally it's a scourge of society. I can accept the fact that wealthy people are going to be able to put their kids in good positions, right? And while it seems unfair that wealthy kids get gifted into certain jobs, it's a reality. I don't know how you get around that. Kind of using friends of friends to get your person, your son or daughter into an industry. That happens. I think it's really dangerous when you let your son or daughter work in your own industry, underneath you, in your own company. I think if they go out and they make their hay, they have to cut their teeth with someone else. At least someone else is in charge of them. They can learn from other people. Oftentimes, we know in the building, I don't think it's happened many times at Lotus Broadcasting, if ever. But many times, you work for a company, and especially when you work in the media, you know who the kids of kids are. I'll be up front. Matt Neverett is tremendous. I think Matt has worked his way up. I worked with Tim Neverett. Tim's going to be on the basketball radio broadcast tonight. Matt's going to be on the TV broadcast. I didn't make this into a Neverett discussion, but I don't want people driving around and be like, you work with the Neveretts. Like, all right, but Matt has done a lot of work at the minor league level for years and years and years, and just ask him about all the jobs he's had. I think the dangerous spots are with situations like the bus family. And we found out today, and I'm not trying to laugh at it, but some of the younger buses just got bumped by new Lakers ownership. Mark Walter. We know Jeannie's still around. She's in some power position. But two of the younger bus kids who have been actually in basketball operations for more than a few years, well, they're out. Jeff, I don't know how much you've talked Lakers over the years. I know you're relatively new to the area. The Lakers are a monster topic here in town. And we haven't really talked about the Buss family a whole lot recently, aside from the sale to Mark Walter and his billionaire group. But there was a time we talked about the Buss family a lot, because when Dr. Jerry passed away, it really was a cluster for a while.
I'm gonna say, at least for Joey and Jesse, who were the ones who were let go from their front office positions today, most of my knowledge of the bus family, of course, comes from being an outsider's perspective out here.
Right.
And I'll say this, that HBO, what was the name of the HBO show? What was the name of the HBO show again that I'm blanking on right now, Cofield?
Me too, but keep going. I know what you're talking about.
But those two guys, the younger kids were not really.
you're talking about the
drama,
the brothers and, yeah, and Johnny and Jimmy.
Exactly. Yeah. They were not really put well together. I said, look, I'll just say this more than anything. When new ownership takes over any company, stuff like this happens all the time. So, I don't know why if anyone's surprised out there that this happened. And for Jeannie, I mean, Jeannie has obviously shown that she is very qualified and she should still be in the high position that she is there with the new ownership.
Well, I that was kind of the biggest part of the story was that Jeannie was the one who took it the most seriously. She had the best eye for business. She also had an eye for, you know, running operations, maybe not a basketball expert, but she was the one who took it the most seriously. And listen, with rich kids, some of them want to work. Some of them have that same, you know, moxie that mom or dad had, and others are just, they're just kind of lazy. Like, there's, when there is no rock bottom, you don't have to be real disciplined in life. And I think we all know, I could probably give you a laundry list. You wouldn't know who they are, but I could name, you know, I don't know, 50 people I've worked with or I've been around or business owners, or I'm like, the kid doesn't care because there is no rock bottom. Like, if you are never in facing the potential of having no money and not being able to survive and maybe having to go get a job outside of your own field, then you don't get it. If you can always turn to mom or dad and get the bailout, it's kind of a different thing. And I'm not trying to character assassinate these two bus kids who got dumped from the Lakers, Joey and Jesse, but it got me thinking of what happened more than a few years ago now with Jeannie Buss, where she actually had to tell her brother, you're fired. Like, mm-hmm. you're screwing up the organization. Because there was a time after Dr. Jerry passed away that Jim and Jeannie, there's too many J's. That's the other thing. Give your kids different names, please. But there was a time when it was like, Jim, what are you doing? Like, you're jacking up the organization, and the organization got really freaking embarrassing. And then finally Jeannie, when she had enough power, was like, you got to walk. And there's been a lot of bitterness. I know they were probably bitter over the way the HBO thing played out. There was another documentary on Hulu. It kind of played out the same way. They just, you know, Jeannie came off like this hero because she actually likes to work. She wants to achieve, and not everyone wants to achieve. Now, we'll look into this more. We're going to get our LA insider on tomorrow in Arash Markazi, who I'm, you know, for the most part, will probably have all good things to say. But why this is exciting for Lakers fans, and these two guys could be eminently qualified. And here's the great thing about the NBA and the basketball world, right? Jeff, when your name is Buss, do you think they'll be able to get a job somewhere else?
Yeah, I'd say so.
So they're not destitute. They're not out of basketball. They haven't been cheated. I mean, I saw one of them commenting like, oh, well, you know, it began a couple of years ago and we were just pushed out and basically we were just ignored. Well, then leave. Go get a job somewhere else. Like, the rest of us have to face this stuff. If these guys are talented basketball guys, and guess what? They will pop up somewhere. I'll ask you, and I don't know if you know the whole, you know, genealogy of the family, but there is a power family that was tied and is tied to Mizzou, right? In the Cronkies.
Yeah, of course.
And I got to tell you, from what I hear, the Cronky son, is it Josh?
Yes, Josh Cronky.
Who was a walk-on on the basketball team, right?
Yep.
He's for real. I know people who work in Denver, who work around the Cronky, who work for the Cronky, whatever it's called, Sports Enterprises, and like he at least the sports end of it, he'll be able to take over for his father. He basically has already. Like, he's legit.
Well, I was going to say Josh might, and as obviously Stan is one of the most successful businessmen in the whole country. Josh, I mean, with running a sports team, I mean, look at how good the Nuggets and the Avalanche have been since he's fully taken over the reins there.
Look at what he did last year. You have a franchise that won a championship a year before, whatever it was, 2 years before. You have leadership completely fractured because the GM and the coach can't get along.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically, you know what, I'm not picking a side. You're both fired. Get out.
Yeah, pretty
much. This ain't working. I see what's not happening here, and the mature thing to do is I'm not picking a side because you two clearly can't work together, which is, I think, a real indictment on both of those guys. So we're gonna do what's best for the organization. You're both out.
Well, and also too, despite a little bit of a shaky start, Arsenal across the pond there, Cofield, has turned out to be pretty happy to have those guys running that team as well, too.
Well, going back to what I was saying about, again, we want more information on this. It just came down in the last couple of hours. A couple of the bus kids were pushed out by the new ownership group, Mark Walter. So, you know, I understand the emotional ties, and it's the buses, and it's another one of those things like, oh, the buses are going to kind of lose control of the team. Well, they did sell it, but if the new group is going to run the Lakers like a big business and like they do with the Dodgers, then if you're a Lakers fan, as much as, you know, you can tug on the heartstrings for the bus family, how do you want to run? How do you want to run, Jeff?
You wanted to run as close to the Dodgers organization as humanly possible.
Right. And if there's some, you know, there's some kids who are working in important positions, some nepotism has reigned, and they're not doing their jobs, or, I mean, in this case, I mean, I don't want to get to everything that I've seen up on the internets, because everything's not verified, but just stuff about who voted for the new group and who didn't and all that. So maybe this is more vindictive, and we'll find out, than anything else. But I have a feeling it's just, hey, this is the way we do business. You know, we analyzed who's doing a good job, who isn't, who's pulling their weight, who isn't, and we're move on. So, and like I said, the Joey and Jesse bus, if they're great basketball people, then I'm sure there's a university that will hire them. There's lots of, you know, director of basketball operations jobs around the country. There's more basketball jobs than ever now, Jeff.
Steve,
I mean, with the money in college sports especially, but in the NBA, I feel like every NBA organization with 17 coaches, and then there's like, you know, 93 guys, women, guys in the front office. There'll be a job somewhere if they want to work.
Well, I mean, just how about Steve? If they're really that good, Steve Ballmer will call them up, right?
Right. He knows them. They're right there. Hey, guys. Maybe you could watch my back so I don't get freaking swindled by whatever the hell happened with Steve Ballmer. So, all right, strong start to the show. I know I'm all fired up, but Strip View Pavilion actually is where we're doing the show today at the Thomas & Mack. 6:30 with the basketball pregame for the Runner Rebels. Good test tonight in St. Joe's. Josh Pastner's team's coming off a nice win against Memphis. We'll have an abbreviated edition of the Dan Mullen radio show right here at the T&M. That one goes up at 6 o'clock. Jeff's back in the Finley Toyota Studios, so we're rocking and rolling here on ESPN Las Vegas. Coming up a little later in the hour, maybe some of that racial stuff that I was talking about. Some people are really pissed off that blanket statements are being made about jobs like Ole Miss in Arkansas.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, rolling on here on this Thursday. Parles in the Finley Toyota Studios. Cofield out here getting ready for a double dip of Mullen radio show and Rebel basketball. Thomas & Mack, Thomas & Mack, Thomas & Mack. There's so much going on in Vegas. It's F1 weekend. I hadn't known until yesterday something that Adam Hill had mentioned, maybe it was 2 days ago, Jeff, that the Raiders actually, when they can play home games on F1 weekend, that's actually a preference. They want to do that.
Hmm.
How about that for a big weekend?
They technically would have had two this week in F1 week, because a Monday and a Sunday, double dipping.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's a real good point. Rebel football is going to be going down tomorrow at Allegiant Stadium, and they've got something really cool. They're going to do a pregame. You know, it's the Ninth Island Showdown, So they've got Hawaii in town. They're playing for the Golden Pineapple Trophy. It's all brought to you by the Cow downtown. They've got a pregame happy hour at the Coors Light Landing. That'll go from 6 until 7:30 when there's that's kickoff. When there's a kickoff, yeah. It's a football game, so there's a kickoff. 6 to 7:30, Coors Light Landing, half price on domestic drafts at the Torch Bar until the kickoff, and then free light-up lays. I like light-up in the middle of that phrase.
The light-up is the most important part of that, right? I mean,
yes.
It's not just a normal lay. It is one that lights up for you.
It is a light-up. We can make all the jokes we want, but let's be adults, right? Let's be adults. Okay, we got Thursday Night Football going down tonight. And will you tell me, how has it been recently in primetime? Because I know we had an unbelievable run of primetime favorites just killing dogs. Tonight it's Bills and Texans. Bills were 5.5.
Well, last Thursday, remember, it got all the way to 13, and it pushed the one last Thursday in Foxborough. Philadelphia covered on Sunday, and Dallas covered on Monday, so we're two out of the last three. New England covered all the other numbers. I am completely opposite of what we've seen over the last few years with these favorites just covering and winning. And I think this is a really difficult spot for Buffalo, even with no C.J. Stroud again for Houston. The Bills, by the way, Cofield, isn't this bizarre what's going on with Keon Coleman right now? Where Keon Coleman was a healthy scratch last week for Buffalo, and now he's a healthy scratch again for a second straight week. It didn't matter last week because Allen had that epic six touchdown showing, even with the weirdness of his turnovers. But this is a place where Allen has not played well historically. Last year, if you remember, that was that 9-for-30 game where Buffalo let him, where he suffered a concussion. It was clear he had suffered a concussion, but they said he passed protocol. And then a day after the game, they said he had a concussion. But I'm going against what we've seen in primetime over the last few weeks, last year and a half, realistically. I think Houston covers, and I'll go one step further. I think they're going to have the lead in the fourth quarter, and Allen's going to have to drive Buffalo down the field in order to steal this one back. I think this is Houston with a cover, 6, 5.5, whatever number you can get at this point, and Buffalo finds a way to eke this one out at the end.
You're not afraid of backing the neck, Davis Mills.
Davis Mills has been completely fine these first two games. Now, granted, that game against Jacksonville had more to do with Jacksonville idiocy more so than stuff that Houston did right. But look, they did what they were supposed to last week. They went on the road. They won the game. Mills was not overly impressive, but he didn't do anything to lose the game against the NFL's worst. He actually let him in range at the end. So I'm not concerned by Davis Mills here tonight.
Well, the bottom line, the Texans are just about in every game because the defense is off the charts ridiculous.
Has there been a high-end defense that has garnered less respect from most people than this Texans defense? Just because Houston, like those AFC South teams, are always forgotten. Maybe a little less this year because of what Dimes has done in Indianapolis and Jonathan Taylor and that 8-2 start. But it always feels like that AFC South is forgotten. And yet again, you're right. I mean, this is a dynamite defense that, again, I expect them to slow down Allen here.
We did a lot on Monday on the NFC pecking order. What's your pecking order in the AFC? Where are the Bills?
Throw it in a hat and just pick it out randomly at this point. I mean, realistically speaking, Buffalo has to be looked at as the best team in the conference, even though I have a ton of questions about that defense. Just an outrage. Like, they can't stop the run. I mean, Sean Tucker was barely looked at as an NFL running back going into the year, and he smoked them this past week. Obviously, it'll be Chubb and Woody Marks tonight, but I have Buffalo 1. I trust New England a little more than I trust Indianapolis, who then it's Kansas City at 4, but they might not even make the playoffs. I don't care that Denver just beat them. I don't trust Bo Nix in big games moving forward. And then it's Jacksonville. And then I guess, who did I forget? I forgot the Ravens. Yeah, I don't know what to do with the Ravens. Cofield, what do I do with the Ravens at this point?
I'm going to tell you what to do with the Ravens in the 4 o'clock hour because I think you're way off on another team and what they should be doing in what essentially is the second half of the season. Let's do a giveaway here. 2 tickets. We got VGK on home ice on Tuesday. Blackhawks are in town. It's at T-Mobile, the Fortress. AXS.com is where you can get your tickets. We've got 2 tickets right now, though. Caller 7. VGK at home on the second. 364-1100, 364-1100. Caller 7.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So, Jeff, I came out of the gates talking about nepotism or racism as a topic today on Cofield and Company to start. Xavier Pope's coming up in about 15 minutes. So I'll mention the racism thing real briefly before we really dive into it. Stephen A. Smith made a comment about Mississippi, basically saying for African-American players and coaches, maybe not the most attractive place to go. And so now it's being weaponized. This man's opinion is being weaponized. And I actually saw someone earlier calling for his firing because he gave an opinion. And I have no idea if it was a factor in, say, James Franklin decision on what job to take. I've never been to Blacksburg, so I don't know how progressive Blacksburg, Virginia is. I don't know. But I do know people have certain impressions of what the South offers, and Mississippi and Alabama are the South. Like, they're the South. Are we allowed in this era to express ourselves and what we've seen and what we've learned or who we talk to and say, I don't know, I'll ask you, Jeff, are there certain parts of the country that you would not want to work in as a radio guy? Let's just put it on the table, because I have certain areas where I'm like, I think I'd have to be really desperate to work there. I'd like to have my choice of where to work, and there are certain places I don't want
to
be.
To answer your question, 100%, yes. There are places that I have at least been through passing or a few days or however long that I would not want to be. I am 100% in that camp for sure.
What do you think of your experience in, and you went to school at Mizzou, what do you think of your experience in Columbia, Missouri?
From someone who is 18 to 25 years old, there are not many better places in the country to go to college. Now, granted, I mean, being a straight white male, it is pretty easy to be at school there, to say the very least. So,
before you even get to anything else, the school did have a lot of problems.
So
less than 10 years ago.
Well, that was
the area did.
The year after I graduated, well, the state as a whole, obviously, yeah. the Michael Brown shooting was in St. Louis, which is St. Louis area, which is about 90 minutes from Columbia. Mizzou itself had the whole incident in 2015 with protests on campus. That was as a wild time to be in Columbia. But yeah, look, it's. I first off, again, people are allowed to have opinions. I know that's breaking news to everybody out there, right, Cofield, that people are allowed to have opinions on things. But you know, it's it's interesting that you brought up the Franklin part of it. I just go back to, if we go from just a football perspective, Virginia Tech was the perfect place for James Franklin, more so than anything. And we've talked about it with other coaches too. Like, it's, forget the other factors, it's hard to coach in the SEC because the expectations of their football programs are so insane at this point.
Right. And Arkansas is really the one I was thinking of earlier, before all this stuff came down the pike, with Stephen A. saying that, you know, Mississippi's not an attractive place. I mentioned yesterday on the show that there was an Arkansas fan / sort of content creator who said that Arkansas is in real trouble if a mid-school in a mid-conference can get James Franklin to go to VTech over Arkansas. And I think Arkansas, I think Fayetteville, Arkansas provides some challenges. I think Little Rock has some challenges. I think the state of Arkansas has some challenges. And again, I am aware of radio stations pretty much everywhere. The Buzz, which is a good radio station, kills it in Little Rock. Might be a wonderful place to work. Just wouldn't want to be an area that I'd want to live in.
Oh, I will tell you this, Cofield, and I don't want this to come off wrong. I have only been quote unquote scared at one sporting event in my entire life, and it was during a Mizzou Arkansas basketball game when the Arkansas fans started that "Woo Pig Suey" chant in person. that was the only time I've actually been scared, and it's so cultish. And look, I'm with you. I mean, look, there's a lot of states that border Missouri that I have been to or passed through or whatever that I know, and I know my wife would not want to live there either, and I'm with her, of some places that, and some of them even have professional sports, and I was like, nope, I'd much rather be in Las Vegas or wherever else.
By the way, it goes both ways, too. There's a lot of people who are in other parts of the country who look at Las Vegas and are like, I wouldn't want to live in
100%.
That den of sin, and you and I have talked about it. I don't believe that Barry Odom, that his family was completely on board with being here in Las Vegas, and when they had a chance to go, they went. Am I insulted? No. If they didn't like it here, they didn't like it here. That's fine.
Look, every place is not for everybody. I mean, there are some people that are very content to live on a farm in Salina, Kansas, their whole lives, and there's some people that are content to live in bounce around between New York, Chicago, and L.A., and that's it because everywhere else is too small. I get it. I get it 100%. And Cofield, I mean, for you and I, both of us grew up in New Jersey. I mean, most people that I grew up with either live in New Jersey, New York, or Connecticut now just because they didn't want to leave the tri-state area.
Yeah, and that's fine. That's fine with them. I wanted to leave. I couldn't live there. On the discussion of Stephen A. Smith and some of these southern states, I actually leaned on someone I know pretty well, my younger brother, who actually lives in Cullman, Alabama, which is north of Birmingham. Before that, he lived in Knoxville, Tennessee, and he's been a southerner, kind of, for like 18 years at least. And before we got to any of that other stuff, one of the first things he said to me, because he's a big college football fan, he's a big Penn State hater, was, boy, James Franklin and VTech, that is so perfect. You know, as the days go by here, and you realize what Virginia Tech just did, basically just get a guy from, you know, I don't know, I guess you can kind of draw a straight line up to Harrisburg, not exactly. And I know Penn State's not in Harrisburg, but that was, you know, we know Harrisburg because that was the, well, I know it, and you know it, because we grew up relatively close, but that was one of the things that James Franklin always complained about, like, you know, the travel and having to go out to the West Coast, and they don't have runways big enough to handle the massive planes. You got to fly into Harrisburg. But the recruiting footprint for James Franklin and VTech is almost identical to Penn State. It's going to work out really well. Now let's turn to Penn State here. Because I think a lot of people out there, when they're seeing more and more guys, like I saw that John Sumrall was kind of out on the Florida job. He's a Tulane coach. When you look up at Penn State, and I don't know, I can't turn on a radio and not hear like Bob Chesney's name for Penn State. And I'm like, wait, you fired James Franklin to get the JMU coach? Did you see the latest set of odds that I put in our rundown here? These are offshore numbers, but your guy Drinkwitz is 2-1. Brent Key at Georgia Tech is 425. The aforementioned Chesney, who, by the way, is coaching Matt Sluka, who's a very much a Vegas favorite after last year. Chesney, 6.5-1. Brian Hartline, assistant Ohio State's 9-1. John Gruden at Penn State. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
11-1. They're going to steal Kalen DeBoer from Alabama, apparently. That's 15-1. Matt Campbell's 18-1. I'll stop there. Does this list light you up?
No.
And then when what on the list of the names I just mentioned are believable?
Drinkwitz, at this point, we kind of talked about this a little bit. It was either Monday or last week. I don't think Drinkwitz is a great cultural fit at Penn State. I just don't think it makes sense. I think for the open jobs, Drinkwitz fits the best at Florida, but I think he's staying at Missouri from everything I've gathered. Brent Key is a Georgia Tech alum, too, right? So you're going to have to try to steal a guy away from his alma mater. And by the way, he might win the ACC this year. So good luck with that. I mean, can lightning strike twice on a James Madison coach? Like, obviously, Cignetti has become a phenomenon in Bloomington, but how it's not easy to have lightning strike twice. Brian Hartline's been a name from the beginning, but it kind of scares me that a guy who has never been more than a positional coach at Ohio State, that kind of scares me a little bit. Gruden's not happening. DeBoer's not happening. Matt Campbell's time to leave Ames was a decade ago at this point. And then I'm going into later on the list. I'm like, you know, I will tell you this, Cofield. And the people in Happy Valley would lose their minds if this was the hire. But they could do far worse than Pat Fitzgerald. They could do far worse.
I don't disagree with you, but that is not the kind of sizzle that has you dumping James Franklin to go get Pat Fitzgerald. We'll build on this in the Big Four. Coming up next, though, Xavier Pope in Chicago, attorney, voice of reason on the show. We need it oftentimes. He's going to chime in, wants to get into the Bears a little bit, being the odds-on third choice to win the division.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, let's bring in Xavier Pope here on this Thursday. EP, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, Steve?
I'm good. Jeff Parles is here as well. Discussion we just started getting into was one of making blanket statements. And Stephen A. Smith is in the crosshairs because when talking about the Mississippi job and Lane Kiffin, he basically stated that African-American kids don't want to go to Mississippi to play football. Maybe coaches don't want to go there to coach. A Memphis sportscaster, which is right there on the border, you know, near Arkansas and Mississippi, Doc Holliday had this to say about Stephen A. Smith. I want you to listen to this.
Now, this is not the same Ole Miss that recruited me when I was coming out of high school. Now, back then, that's a reason why I didn't go to Ole Miss is because when I went to visit down there, they did have the Confederate flags flying everywhere, all the tailgate, all in the stadium. But that's not the Ole Miss that's down there right now. Every time I go to Oxford, I'm showing nothing but love. Let me let y'all in on something. Screaming A. Smith can't talk to the brothers because brothers don't talk to him. Brothers don't tell him anything. He's not amongst the brothers.
Okay. So we got a little battle brewing here. I saw that Paul Feinbaum called out Stephen A. Smith. So you got two of the powers at ESPN. I want your opinion on this, EP. It's just starting to develop. But what do you think about making blanket statements? Or maybe Stephen A. Smith has been to Mississippi, and this is actually a learned opinion about what he thinks of the state and Oxford, Mississippi.
It would be different if Stephen A. Smith had a consistent message. He's spending his time attacking congresswomen, black woman congresswoman, and then taking it back when criticized about it. Stephen A. Smith is known for making really substantial statements that puff up Stephen A. Smith. I don't know where this man stands on anything. He has made statements in support of the left, right, up, down. And people may say that, hey, that may be some sort of critical thinking, but I don't think so. I think that when you have a platform like Stephen A. Smith, I feel like sometimes he feels at liberty to say whatever he feels to be able to fit where his narrative is at the moment. And I think it's more self-interested words from Stephen A. Smith more than the issue at hand.
So if this is all a bit, do we have the right to get mad at him when, you know, the bit might rub some people on one side or the other wrong way? How do you treat it? You just ignore him?
Well, I think that Stephen A. Smith is a black man in America. And I think that from a standpoint of considering bring up issues that may spotlight racial inequities in a society that's pushing back on rolling back DEI, making it almost practically illegal to do it. I think that at the very least, it should be looked at, regardless of the source where it's coming from in the area it is. So, yes, we can criticize Stephen A. Smith and say, okay, how sincere are you about this issue? But then that doesn't mean you don't turn away from the issue entirely.
I'm actually going to read what he said because paraphrasing it doesn't really, I'm not even going to say do it justice, but we have to be accurate. He said, I'm going to bring it home, all right? You can't say it, or y'all can't say it, leave it to me. I'll say it, which is classic Stephen A. Like, I'm going to be the one who
falls in the short. Exactly.
I'll say it. The brothers ain't trying to come to Oxford, Mississippi for the most part compared to Gainesville or Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Let's just call it what it is. Okay? I think there's quite the debate to have between Oxford, Gainesville, and Baton Rouge in terms of forward thinking and progress over the last whatever 50 or 100 years.
Exactly. And that's why I think sometimes Stephen A. Smith put his foot in his mouth. I mean, those are challenged places in our society right now in terms of the politics that are currently there. I just think that, yes, it's important to raise issues, particularly in college coaching as it relates to black coaches. Definitely that. The political, social environment, given the time that we're living in, perfectly fine to bring that up as well. I just think that just consider the source.
Xavier Pope is up on Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas. You know, one of my real heroes of sports over the last 25 years is LeBron James, and we share the fact that we're both follically challenged. And then I go up on Threads and Xavier Pope on Threads, and I feel like you're taking shots at his hair and his beard. There's no need for that. What's wrong with you, man? Just because you have a good head of hair, the rest of us aren't so lucky.
Hey, he's rolling with it. I just laugh because he had a do-rag on, and I look out, and he's just pretty much very little hair on his head. I'm like, that's supposed to be for waves? There's no waves going on there. That's a shallow pool, man. So if you're follically challenged, you just got to just embrace it, you know, do whatever you can. But I think he also had the beard that was dyed, too. Hey, now, I'm getting a couple of grays in my beard. I've been asked while I dye my beard. That is a legitimate question men must ask themselves. And I say ask the woman that loves your beard whether it's okay or not.
Yeah, we talked about this last week. I'll give you another guy that I share similarities with because, like I said, LeBron and I identical with the follicly challenged stuff. Joe Mazzulla is, like, when people say he stands on business, he does stand on business. Listen to this question, EP, from... It sounds like, I don't know, he's like 11 or 12. By the way, great delivery when you hear this. But apparently it was Kids Day around the Celtics, and he asked a question I think was supposed to be really light, and Joe Mazzulla's like, nope, I am serious all the time. Fire this.
It's Kids Day here at the Garden. How do you balance pushing players to improve while also keeping the game fun for them?
I struggle with that, to be honest with you. I think everyone has a different definition of fun. And, you know, I think fun's a cop-out sometimes when things aren't going well. Everybody likes to say, well, let's just have fun. And it's like, well... You know, what does that mean? You know, that phrase can be a cop-out sometimes. So as you get older, kid, don't use it, you know? It's like, oh, I just want to have fun. It's like, well, what does that mean?
The kid thanked him for the answer. He's like, yeah, good answer. How about that? Just telling a kid, like, hey, I'm going to teach you a lesson. Nothing's fun.
Hey, well, listen, that kid came like an adult. The way he framed that question, that sounded like a pro.
Yeah.
That kid got going to places. I'm telling you right now, Steve. I played that back a couple times just to listen to the delivery of the kid. So I think that just the fact that he asked the question like a professional, he got a professional answer. And I think that that's something that the kid could take credit for. He probably asked the best question out of everyone that asked the question that night. That's what I was really impressed with, was not the answer of the coach, but the question of the kid.
So what do you think of Mazzulla saying too often at workplaces, people are like, oh, we're just having fun. Like, is that a cop-out?
No, I think, you know, we always talk about the type of coach that likes to have fun, that likes to have serious. I mean, that's, you know, the posture of a coach. And we've seen coaches win doing those, having those different styles and being able to how they deliver that message to his players. That way that coaches coach and how they approach coaching and how they approach players' attitude towards, quote unquote, the business of the basketball, the business of life. Has varied over time. There's plenty of books that you can read from different types of coaches about the different ways how you can live your life. And this is no different.
When you hear that, do you think, hey, that Joe Mazzulla, that's a guy who's going to burn out?
No, I don't think that. I think it's also, you know, it comes down to, you know, we have with a game of analytics. I mean, you know, how many minutes that guys are playing. I mean, how many games that guys might be missing. What may be considered the rest days that you're using for guys, and severity of some of these injuries and the type of injuries that they're getting and the type of medical staff you have there and the off-season programs those players do. This has changed over the course of time. These are things that can be measured. These are things that are reported to the upper management of teams, and they make decisions when teams are not winning. And if they are winning, then you look and see, hey, let's do that thing and keep doing it.
So, EP, we got a crazy weekend in Vegas. Right now I'm set up at the UNLV Arena, the Thomas and Mack, for a basketball game. Tomorrow night there's a football game against Hawaii. Sunday there's a football game with the Raiders going against the Browns. We have F1 in town, which is going to take over the Strip area for the next 4 or 5 days. The Shador thing is a major national story because it got so heated and debated after the draft. Where are you on Shador now that he's kind of been filed away for, you know, for the time being? Now he's out. He's, you know, he's starting a game. Are you rooting for the kid? Like, why? I can't remember what you thought of this whole thing back in May.
Yeah, what I told you, Steve, is that this is the National Football League, and when you get the opportunity to play, you take advantage of it. And there are different components of our team set up players for success. Some franchises are better than others. And then he would get the opportunity to play and get to show what he get to do on the field. That being said, he is a rookie in the National Football League. I think they expect a guy to come running the game, run for 300 yards for three touchdowns, and get another 50 on the ground. I think that's unreasonable. And I think that that's why you have to root for the guy. If you're in a situation where the team isn't winning, and you can't come in and expect to save the season and be a lifestyle rock star. You're here as a guy that's currently hurt on a concussion protocol. You're in air of service. You want to do the best you can to help the team win. And I don't think that's too much pressure to ask for a kid who's already the son of a superstar athlete before in his prime, coach prime.
Xavier Pope up on Threads. I saw that you had posted the story or rethreaded, I don't know what it's called, Pro Football Talk, saying that the Bears are the third choice on the odds board in the NFC North. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, they got rid of ESPN Bet, Pro Football Talk, talking about odds. Okay, I don't know. I don't know where we are with this thing and how people are going to look at the combination of sports media, sports betting. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where we are today. But that was the first thing that came popped in my brain. The second is the Chicago Bears. I mean, they look good, Steve. I mean, I watched them win games, and they won games in ways that playoff teams win. That being said, they've had a very favorable schedule to start the season off. They got a gauntlet. They got to go through Green Bay twice. They got to go face the Eagles. So they got to play the 49ers as well. So that's a big slate of games, you know, in terms of coming on the back half of the Bengals, the Giants. The Vikings, when they're kind of struggling, these were winnable games, and the Bears went out and won those games. So now where that odds going to come through is how they're able to manage that second half schedule.
The NFC North odds at William Hill: Lions are +120, Packers are +130. You got a 4-1 payback on the Bears, and the Vikings have been just about written off as their way out of the race. I will tell you, Xavier, one of the reasons I love having you on is that, like I say, you're a voice of reason, and I think your ability to try to understand, try to reason, has rubbed off on me a little bit. While Steve Cofield of 15 years ago may have hooted and hollered about Bill Belichick hanging out at a cheerleading competition, this new Steve Cofield understands that when you're in a relationship sometimes, you got to do things that you don't want to do.
Yep.
That said, it is pretty damn funny, though. This is crazy. Well, first of all, I don't know what is co-ed adult cheerleading. What is going on here with Jordan Hudson?
Well, there's always been co-ed cheerleading, though, Steve.
Adult? Adult. That'd be like me out there freaking doing tumbles. I mean, she's a little younger than me, but we have adult cheerleading?
Listen, Steve, there's an activity for everyone. Why you got to hate on that? People go out and they play pickleball. I mean, how come they can't cheerlead, man?
maybe some of them do. Sounds like pickleball is actually more dangerous. I've heard about so many injuries in pickleball. I'm now afraid to play pickleball. So maybe co-ed adult cheerleading is safer. But I wonder, like the Cofield of 15 years ago. Say it again.
Who's gonna catch me, Steve?
Right. The Cofield of 15 years ago has changed. I wonder what the Belichick of 15 years ago is thinking about Bill now and at Bill's in season at a cheerleading competition. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think life comes at you fast, Steve. Right? I mean, next one thing you're on the top of the world, winning championship, the best quarterback of all time. Next thing you know, you were a woman that could be your granddaughter at a cheerleading competition, and you have a head of a terrible program. It's a crazy turnaround, man.
Well, maybe we'll be doing radio, and we'll both know in our 70s what it's like to be with a 20-year-old and what we have to do to manage that situation. And then the last laugh will be on Belichick, wherever we'll be at that point. Xavier, we appreciate it, buddy. Have a good weekend.
Love you guys. You too.
There he is, Xavier Pope. Coming up, 4 o'clock hour, live here at the Thomas & Mack.